Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. It's a college podcast at Baseball America. It's the last college podcast of the year from the Podcast Nook, and it's brought to you by MLB Network. We're so happy to have partnered with MLB Network for the broadcast of the 2010 draft. Our draft coverage has been just crazy at BaseballAmerica.com. Our college coverage has been insane at BaseballAmerica.com. And our podcasts have been a refuge every Monday here at BaseballAmerica.com. And now we're getting into Omaha, and the College World Series is set, and we'll be obviously covering the College World Series. Aaron Fitt will be there all week. I'll be there for the first part. We'll have chats from Omaha the first day. Excuse me, the first day of the College World Series. The games are now pushed back to Saturday. On Friday, we'll be chatting from Omaha from the Nike Fieldhouse. We'll have all kinds of coverage. Those chats are also going to include some very special guests, some former college baseball players. So tune in for that. And they are in the field for the final year of the College World Series at Rosenblatt Stadium. I don't think it's the field that we thought we would see. There are eight teams, obviously, but seven of the eight teams are number one seeds. So there's no huge upsets. There's no Fresno State.
Right.
There's no number three seed Oregon State.
And we did say that there were going to be a lot of number one seeds winning regionals and moving on. And we were right about there being a lot of one seeds. They just weren't exactly the one seeds that we expected.
That's right. And I think one of the upsets, let's talk right off the top of the upsets. One of the upsets was an upset, but not a huge upset. We said all year, Aaron, we thought TCU was an Omaha team.
Yeah.
And that Matt Perk was a difference maker for this club. I think we've couched it that way pretty much all year. We just thought going through Austin was going to be too tough for TCU.
Yeah.
And that wasn't any slight of TCU. That was respect.
I thought going through Austin would be too tough for any team in America.
Right, but it wasn't for TCU.
It wasn't for TCU. Honestly, I would have picked Texas to win that regional against Virginia, Arizona State, anyone.
I agree.
I mean, it's not a slight against TCU. I think TCU is outstanding.
I would have picked Texas to win that home super regional against any team in the country. I completely agree. But what was TCU able to do? I mean, was it a flaw in Texas, or did TCU have too much pitching for Texas's good but not great offense?
You know, I don't think it was a flaw in Texas. I mean, Texas did score 14 runs in that middle game. They can score. I mean,
right.
They've proven it all year long. This is one of the better offensive teams they've had in a while, in fact.
It was a team record for home runs, correct?
It was a team record for home runs. But, you know, in the two losses, they scored one run in each game, and that's a credit to Matt Perk. And it's a credit to Kyle Winkler.
Kyle Winkler, a little overshadowed all year by how good Perk has been, but Kyle Winkler, big-time guy out of high school. The only reason he's not regarded as highly as Matt Perk is he's not as tall.
Yeah.
He's a 6-foot righty.
Right.
But he's got...
I mean, his stuff isn't as electric either, but it's
right.
very good
but
stuff.
But it's good stuff. That's what I meant to say. You're right, it's not as electric as Matt Perk, but it's good stuff. I mean, if he were 6'4 and right-handed, it would be second, third-round stuff.
And, you know, also... I mean, Tyler Lockwood is kind of an unsung hero here. He got the save in both those games on the bookend games there, that series. And he is, you know, talk about not a high-profile guy, not a guy with a ton of velocity. I mean, he's a pitchability right-hander, but a veteran who's been around. He's a senior.
He's a career record holder now in appearances at TCU. I mean, this guy's been a huge part
former
of
Friday
this program's
starter
success.
For them.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a nice guy to have in your bullpen. So, I mean, I think you got to give TCU's pitchers credit. And, you know, TCU, their offense is good enough. Even against elite pitching, they were able to scratch out a few runs. We'll see, you know, as we go forward here this weekend, we'll see if they can do it again against more elite pitching, because they're going to see some more elite pitching, I suspect.
Now, I haven't thought about this. Are they the first Mountain West Conference team to get to Omaha since that conference began? I believe they are.
I think they are. Yeah, I can't think who else would have been.
Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive for them to – I mean, this is a team that lost twice to Air Force.
Yeah.
And that's basically the reason why they weren't a top eight national seed. But it's like amazingly consistent season all year.
The only team in the nation that didn't lose a weekend series this year.
That's pretty stunning.
And they still haven't lost a weekend, unlike –
That's right.
I mean, you know, Texas, not only did they lose the first weekend series of the year, but they lost – you know, they went 0-3 in the conference
tournament. You're right.
TCU didn't lose the conference tournament. They won the regional, won the super. They still haven't lost a weekend.
TCU has been the nation's most consistent team.
Yeah.
That's a very easy statement to make. And the Horned Frogs will play Florida State, which played a very tough, competitive super regional with Vanderbilt. But in the end, Aaron, Florida State playing at home equals – advancing to Omaha. Second time in 3 years. I think we're going to look at the career of some of these Florida State juniors, the Mike McGees and the Tyler Holtz and the Jeff Parkers and some of those guys, Johnny Gast. That's a hell of a recruiting class to be excellent guys like or as parts of the wheel, the spokes around the middle of the wheel, around the middle of Buster Posey in 2008.
Yeah.
Terrible stumbling analogy by me,
yeah,
but they were great supporting parts to Buster Posey, who was the key to that team in 2008. Now those guys are the team, basically.
Yeah.
And Mike McGee, I don't think we could. I think you and I both agree. If we just had a college baseball MVP, Mike McGee would be in the very short list of discussion because
no
of
question.
What he means to that team offensively, the walk-off home run in the first game of that Super Regional, what he means to their bullpen. Talk a little bit about what was the separator for you with Florida State and Vanderbilt, and are you surprised Florida State's in Omaha?
No. I mean, I look back at last year's 8 for Omaha. I had Florida State in there, as well as I think I also had Florida, maybe another team or two. I mean, it was a hit-and-miss process, as always. But, no, I mean, I thought this was going to be a really good team. And their preseason, what, top 10, certainly, number 9, maybe. I mean, we thought this would be this team would be a factor.
They were top 10, really, all year.
Yeah.
Until they lost that last weekend of the
series,
getting swept by Clemson. Who knew that was two College World Series teams? Because
right.
At the time, it looked like neither was a College World Series
Absolutely,
team.
Absolutely, it did. Amazing that the two ACC teams in Omaha are from that division, whereas I think the other division with Virginia and Georgia Tech and Miami and Virginia Tech even seemed like the better division all year.
Sorry, I had to put that in for Miami. But it's amazing. It is amazing. And I think Florida State, the one thing you can't take away from Florida State is they know who they are.
They do. And you know, they're so darn consistent. Every
right.
year with their approach, they're so patient. They work the count. It works for them. It really does. And, you know, and this team is just filled with, as I keep saying week after week, it's just filled with winning ball players. And they don't win pretty. They never win pretty, it seems like, this season. But they
win.
I will say,
Aaron, in last year's 8 for Omaha, Florida and Florida State are the only two of the 8 that didn't make it. I mean, that made it. Cal State Fullerton made it to Super Regional. Georgia Tech did not. LSU did not, Rice did not, Texas obviously did, Virginia obviously did. 8 more to follow, Super Regional team, Arkansas, Clemson, Omaha, Georgia,
Yeah.
Everybody hurts.
Yeah.
Take comfort in your friends.
Yep.
Oregon State made it to regionals, San Diego, regional, South Carolina, Omaha, Miami, Super Regional, UCLA, Omaha. So 5 of your top 16 are here.
And I think
Omaha.
I listed Arizona State as a quote-unquote sleeper.
They were a sleeper. As was Alabama, which gets a Super Regional. As was Coastal Carolina, Super Regional. As was Vanderbilt, Super Regional. Not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad a year out.
It's kind of like a very, very, very preliminary preseason top 25, and in that context, it's not bad.
I'm stunned that you didn't have TCU.
Yeah.
But
we didn't know they were going to get Matt Perk.
That's it. We didn't know they were going to get Matt Perk. It's Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. And the other side of that bracket, so TCU and Florida State play. And then UCLA and Florida are matched up. And, Aaron,
yeah.
I think we thought the Fullerton-UCLA Super Regional could be the best one. I'm not sure that it was the best one, but it certainly was, rest assured, it was dramatic.
Yeah.
And UCLA an out away from being swept by the Titans. And Tyler Ramatula leads UCLA back. They blow that lead in Red Sox 86 fashion against the Angels. Where the Red Sox blew the lead that Dave Henderson gave them in game
right.
5 and then had to come back and win that game in extra innings. Anyhow, enough of our Red Sox fandom. But UCLA comes back from the brink, and then Rob Rasmussen, one of my all-time personal cheese balls, from the time I talked to him and I out the scout, Chuck Krim, he's now a pitching coach in the Dodger system, from the time I talked to Chuck Krim doing California coverage in 2007, and Chuck Krim was like, "Well, the guy you haven't mentioned is Rasmussen. That guy's breaking ball is filthy." It was awesome. I love Chuck Krim. I had him on my 1986 through 1990 Retro League teams as well. So Chuck Krim pitched me to the Retro 1989 playoffs with 2 complete games on 3 days rest. So I'm always indebted to Chuck Krim. It's an unbelievable conflagration of personal cheese balls. Chuck Krim and Rob Rasmussen together. You just don't get that too often in your life.
That's tangent of the day right
That's
there.
That's tangent
like
of the
that.
Year. But Rob Rasmussen with a complete game 2 hitter to just shut down Fullerton. I want to say this. Fullerton with an unbelievably valiant season. They got to a terrible start. They righted the ship. They had injuries all year.
Yeah.
No Gary Brown for Super Regionals. No
That's
Tyler
right.
Pill to pitch for them for the last basically 6 weeks. And they still get an out from Omaha. I think it's a tremendous job by those players, by Dave Serrano, that coaching staff. But in the end, Aaron, I just think UCLA was just better.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were more talented, and for once,
and Fullerton's talented. Fullerton is very talented.
Fullerton is very talented. You're absolutely right. And they're going to be a factor again next year. But
that's a heck of a sophomore class they have. Even though they're losing two first-round picks and Brown and Cologne, that is an amazingly talented sophomore class.
Yeah.
But UCLA, I guess offensively, Aaron, what was it UCLA was able to do offensively this year? We knew they were going to have the pitching just in the course of the year and on the course of the weekend. What was UCLA able to do offensively that put them over the hump?
Well, you know, I think it's like our super regional scouting report on UCLA said is they're just more balanced and dangerous offensively than they have been. They rather than sit back and you know wait for the 3-run home run or which they didn't always do, but in general
that
was
the way they won in '97 for sure.
Sure, this team manufactures runs. It can you know it plays the Rick Vanderhook style, the former Fullerton style,
That's right.
But they also do have some pop, and they can beat you different ways. They're much more balanced right-handed and left-handed than they used to be. Last year's team was very right-handed. Now they've got those lefties in the lineup thanks to the freshman class largely. It's definitely a better offense. It's more versatile. It's not a world-beater offense. They can be stopped, certainly.
Right.
But
this side of the bracket, Florida State's offense stands out to me as on paper the best offense. Florida's is good.
I think TCU has the best offense.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And statistically, I think they do as well.
But they're playing in the Mountain West. They're playing at altitude.
That's true.
I mean, to me, I know it's Texas, but they were pretty tame in the Super Regional as well. What, they score 8 runs the whole Super Regional?
Yeah, but I mean, again, they're playing.
They are playing
they're
Texas.
They're facing maybe the best pitching staff ever. I mean,
right.
You could make the case.
Right. Well, they didn't get the Omaha, so I'll take Rice.
No,
but, yes, it's one of the best ones. But to me, it seems like TCU doesn't have a standout player. They're very solid 1-9.
Yeah.
But there's not a great offensive player there that makes me think they're the best team. Whereas I think if you plunk Tyler Holt on the TCU's lineup, he's their best hitter.
Yeah, that's probably
true. I think if you plunk Preston Tucker, even though you like him more than I do, I like him. But if you put Preston Tucker in TCU's lineup, he's their best hitter.
That's a good point also.
So I think
Jason Coates is in that discussion. I mean, I think he's maybe not quite as good as those guys, but he's not far removed. I think he's a really good underrated player.
Good point. I think that TCU's probably the most – well, as complete a lineup maybe as Florida State. I think Florida State executes so well.
They really do.
Maybe you're taking them out of their home ballpark is going to be a difference maker for them, but I just love Florida State's offense. It's just so – they grind things out. They all take good at-bats.
Yeah.
They're just really, really good. We're skipping. We're jumping ahead a little bit.
You might have sold me on this, actually, now that you mention it. I mean, I think looking at it, I think maybe Florida State is the better offensive team than TCU. They also have more balance left and right again. I mean, that's
– plus, it seems like Cardullo's hot. He's starting
Cardullo's
to hit.
Cardullo's come around.
He's not going to hit 400 like he did last year.
Yeah.
But he's come around a little bit.
I mean, they've got a couple of good sophomores that I think get overlooked with Sherman Johnson and James Ramsey. And
Jace Boyd, the freshman, had a nice year. He's an impactful guy.
And if you compare their offense to TCU's, I mean, TCU is so right-handed. They've only got one lefty and one switch hitter, really, in the lineup. Florida State does have, I think they've got 6 righties and 3 lefties. I mean, that's a little bit better balance. And that's unusual for Florida State to be more right-handed leaning.
You're right. And one thing, I'll just throw this in there. I think Virginia and Texas wish they could have switched super regional opponents. Obviously, you can't because of Oklahoma in the conference. But all that right-handedness for TCU, going to Texas, even though they had to face all those Texas right-handed pitchers, but Oklahoma's lineup being nice and balanced and Virginia not having enough left-handed pitching really, I think, affected them. We'll talk about that more on the other half of the bracket. But Florida is the other team here, and obviously, Aaron, Florida's the number 3 national seed. They're the highest seed on this bracket. They're the second highest seed left with Texas eliminated. Is Florida the favorite on this side for you as they beat Miami rather handily, and the Hurricanes really just did not put their best foot forward in that super regional?
I suppose they're the favorite. I mean, they're number 3 national seed. They won the SEC.
They've been really in our top 4 or 5 for a long time in our rankings.
Yeah, and
right, we've had them there for a long time.
This side of the bracket is wide open. I think these are 4 really good teams, and I spent the last hour before this podcast trying to decide who I was going to pick on that side of the bracket because I just don't know. I just think it could go in any direction. But, you know, again, when it comes to balance, I mean, Florida, we know they're good on the mound. They're great in the bullpen.
Yeah.
They're great defensively, and we love teams that play good defense in the postseason.
I think that really 3 of these teams are very similar, Florida, UCLA, and TCU,
yeah,
in that way. They're pretty balanced complete teams. They have, you know, I would say starting pitching wise, UCLA is the front runner, but boy, Florida's pitching is so deep and good.
Right.
And TCU, obviously, Perk, Winkler. We've talked about Lockwood. We've talked about their depth all year. And whereas Florida State's more depth, they really don't have an ace. Right now they're kind of, you know, Sean Gill, Holstaff, Parker.
I mean,
Blavin.
It's come around a little bit because Brian Bush has kind of settled into the number two spot.
Gaston Parker kind of like basically share a game every
day.
It
seems like Parker now has moved into more of the starting role, but
he's
not
trusted.
Yeah.
We just named their trusted guys, basically. Right. Their high trust guys are Gil Martin, Parker, Johnny Gast, Bush,
and
McGee.
Of course Mike McGee, right.
So that's their five guys. And there'll be obviously the other people. They like the mix and match of the bullpen.
Yeah.
But their main five are those five guys.
To me, because of they're so much less deep than these other three teams on this side of the bracket, and I think these four teams are so good that I don't know that I necessarily see a team going 3-0 on this side. I don't think it favors Florida State. I think their lack of pitching depth will catch up with them against these three elite teams.
They have the least pitching of these teams. I like their top five guys. They're fine, but
I think
feel
they're
better.
Just okay.
I think they're just okay. I think they're just okay.
All these other teams have elite guys, and Florida State doesn't.
Gil
Martin this year is not an elite guy.
He's not. He's got seven losses. He gets hammered. He gets hammered regularly. I mean, he's fine, but he's not an ace.
He was an ace last year. He just hasn't been this year.
Here's a very interesting note that I'm noticing on this bracket, too. Jim Schlossnagel's been to Omaha as an assistant with Tulane. John Savage has been to Omaha as an assistant at Southern California.
Kevin
O'Sullivan has been to Omaha as an assistant at Clemson. None of these guys have taken their own team to Omaha. First time for all three of them. Mike Martin's been to Omaha more than any other coach without winning a national championship.
13th trip? Or
that's correct. That's
14th, maybe?
13th, I believe. I think it's 13th. But dadgummit, one of these years, Florida State's going to win, you'd think. But it doesn't seem like it sets up well for them.
This is actually number 14.
It's 14, wow. Just congratulations to Mike Martin. What an unbelievable legacy of consistency for that program.
Oh, yeah.
And this is huge to get back after the drought from 2000, 2008, not to get back a second time in 3 years.
Yeah.
We're back, baby. You know, Seminole Nation is back
in Omaha.
So who are you picking over here? I think Florida is the most complete team. They've been the best team we've ranked all year. Florida, consistently, UCLA was ahead of them a little bit in the rankings. But I think for the last month and a half, Florida has been our top-ranked team.
Is that who you're picking?
I'm asking you, who are you picking? I'm picking the Bruins.
You are.
I'm picking the Bruins to win this because they're starting pitching. I actually think they can go 3-0. If any team can go 3-0, it's UCLA because of that pitching.
I do agree with you that they've got a real shot at it, and I like the way their big three guys have pitched. Rasmussen and Cole and Bauer. I mean, it's unlike earlier in the year when they faced Arizona State and maybe those guys weren't at their sharpest. Remember, they were swept at home by Arizona State.
Yes, they were.
Those guys have pitched better lately. But that said, I mean, Garrett Cole still gave up four runs in his last outing.
He wasn't great against Fullerton.
Bauer gave up six runs against Fullerton. I mean, they can be beaten. And here's what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
I think
Florida's a bad matchup for them because they have some aggressive hitters.
Yes, they have some aggressive hitters. I think a guy like Preston Tucker, I just really see Preston Tucker having a huge week here.
Okay.
Left-handed power bat, mature hitter. He's going to make those guys work. I see Tucker, maybe Maddox. These guys are guys with elite bat speed, elite prospects. They can hit velocity. I don't think they're going to be intimidated. I think these guys are going to have a couple of big swings. I think that Florida is going to scrap together. You know, they play that same West Coast style.
They can.
I mean,
they can really bunt.
I mean, one thing that struck me, John, is a quick side tangent here. At the SEC tournament, when we were on the field for batting practice the day before, doing that little radio show, watching all these teams take BP, and then Florida gets up there, and they spend half their time gathering a little circle right on home plate, and Sully would just toss some balls, and they would just do these little bunt drills. They spend half their time doing that stuff.
Huh.
Nobody else did that.
They take the small game seriously.
They take it very seriously. I think the entire package, I see Florida State coming out and jumping UCLA, Garrett Cole.
Florida.
So I think Florida wins that first game. I like TCU on the other side in that first game.
Hard to pick against Matt Perk right now.
Yeah.
And for anybody who has a problem with the way he wears his hat, keep it to yourself. I mean, for crying out loud, are we really going to be upset about the way a 19-year-old lefty – he's a lefty.
Yeah.
Actually, I guess he's 20. He'll be draft eligible next year.
Sure.
But are we really going to fixate on the way a guy wears his hat? Please. Anyway.
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but I've heard you talk about it.
Yeah.
But
outrageous.
you know, and then I think it comes down to TCU and Florida for me. I just go back and forth on this question.
I know you love TCU.
You know I love TCU.
That team does not have a weakness. They just don't. I mean, maybe they're so right-handed.
I think Florida's a little bit better up the middle. I think Fontana and Adams is more solid than Featherston and Jerome Pena.
Nolan Fontana. Sorry, it makes me think of Anchorman. But, yes, they are better. They are better up the middle. I'm still picking the Bruins. I like their starting pitching. I actually don't think Florida's a good matchup for them. They do have good hitters, but they're just aggressive. I don't think Austin Maddox is going to touch Gerrit Cole. He's got 7 walks. He chases pitches. You need to work. Mike Zunino has 9 walks. Matt Dendecker strikes out more than he walks. Josh Adams strikes out a lot.
And I'll
Preston
say this
Tucker
too.
And Nolan Fontana are your 2 guys. And even the other guys, the rest of those guys, strike out a lot. I think that Gator team is a tough matchup for Gerrit Cole. It's a tough matchup for Florida because I think they're a little bit almost too free swinging. And I think Gerrit Cole can take advantage of that, expand the zone. I think we're going to see good Gerrit Cole in Omaha.
We might. And I will say this, too. Even if UCLA loses the first game, I think that's a team that is deep enough on the mound to make a run through loser's bracket because of the Claypool factor,
absolutely.
First of all.
Gerrit Claypool could be like the Daniel Turpin
sure.
of this side of the bracket. Or what's the other guy? Joe Patterson, that was lefty, who was great for them, great for Oregon State. They had pitching depth they were able to go to. Daniel Turpin was really kind of like their swing guy who was really good for them both years. But I like UCLA on the side of the bracket. It sounds like you're picking between Florida and TCU, and you're leaning toward the Gators.
I'm picking between Florida and TCU. I think TCU will be able to scratch out a few runs against any pitching staff in this side of the bracket, just like they did against Texas.
Yeah.
I love the way Winkler's pitching right now. I think Stephen Maxwell will bounce back from his one rough start last week. I mean, he's been really good all season other than that. And Tyler Lockwood is a bounce-back arm. I mean, I don't like TCU's pen quite as much as Florida's or UCLA's, but I think having that senior back there is a nice luxury. Heck with it, John. I'm taking TCU.
You are taking TCU. How about that? I'm taking the Bruins. Here on the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. We want to remind you that we're brought to you by MLB Network. And we also want to remind you that Baseball America and MLB Network have teamed for a special offer. And you can get 4 issues of Baseball America for just $4 with our MLB Network offer. Just visit baseballamerica.com/MLB Network for our 4-for-4 deal. Aaron, let's move on to the other side of the bracket. This podcast is already going a little long. But Arizona State, you got to give props to the Sun Devils and the Tim Esme. A very tough 2-game super regional with Arkansas. Arkansas played them tough, a banged-up Arkansas team. But Arizona State takes care of business every way, and they get to the College World Series second straight year, obviously an all-new coaching staff. The Sun Devils will face Clemson, who did everything it could to lose that super regional in the ninth inning against Alabama, but just held on. That was an ugly, frightening inning to watch. But through trials and tribulation, Clemson gets to Omaha, and credit to Jack Leggett for taking a team without really a number one starter. A good number one, but not a great number one. Without really great lineup depth, without great defense, without a closer.
I think they have pretty good lineup depth.
Pretty good, but I wouldn't say it's great. They still have some guys at the bottom of the lineup. There's not any. The best thing about their team is their power in the middle of their lineup.
Yep.
That's to me their strength is the middle of their lineup. Top 5 guys in their lineup are really good.
Yep.
But however you want to hit them, like Miller, Freeman's a great like 2-hole type guy. Parker, Schaus, Hinson. That's a really nice start for any team.
I agree, but I mean also you've got Richie Schaefer who's starting to come up big.
He had a huge super regional. You're right.
You've got Wilson Boyd who's been around forever and is good hitter,
Hickory
good college hitter.
Hickory represent for Wilson Boyd.
You've got Will Lamb who's a left-hand hitter with some power and he has got holes, but I mean he can draw some walks. He can do some. He's athletic. He can run.
But their lineup's not as good as Arizona State's. The numbers might be better, but it's not as good an offense as Arizona State.
I think Arizona State's offense is beats you in more ways. I think that is true.
So their strength,
I think Clemson's weaknesses to me are the bullpen and the defense at shortstop. I think the lineup is really good.
I do.
In fact, it's the best offensive lineup in the College World Series this year statistically.
Really?
Yeah.
See, if I had to pick the best lineup, I would pick Arizona State.
It's like we talked about all year, though. I mean, the one way that they can't really beat you is with power. They're not a powerful lineup. They do have Cole Calhoun still. Omaha darling, Cole
That's
Calhoun,
it.
Big Red.
That's it.
He's got 16 home runs. You know, there's a little bit of pop in there. And certainly McPhee and Torres, Richie Torres, and I mean, those guys can run into one now and then. But, I mean, it's more like UCLA's offense than it is like Clemson's
right. Yeah,
or
you're right.
Florida State.
You're right. It's not your typical Arizona State lineup with, like, a couple guys with Thunder in there as opposed to.
But this, by the way, is an interesting matchup, a rematch of last year's Super Regional down in Tempe with Arizona State and Clemson. But I think Arizona State wins again. I just, they're just – Arizona State is a machine. I mean, they're just so good. They're just so balanced and deep.
If they have a lead and it's a sixth inning, forget about it. I mean, they're just – they're too good in the bullpen. They've been so good all year. And Arkansas even got to Lampson, but still not enough. And, they got a runoff in the tie. Was it the second game or the first game? I forget. I mean, I thought that they roughed them up.
I thought he had – didn't he have five scoreless innings in one of those games, or was that in the regional? I'm starting to
– I think everything's
starting to blend together here.
Yeah, no, they are all starting to blend together. I could be mixing up my Lampson with my Swaggerty as well. That could be part of the problem.
I think you are. You're mixing up Lampson and Swaggerty.
All right.
Lampson, I think, threw five scoreless against Arkansas game.
Their bullpen has been so lights out for so long. What is there a chink in the Arizona State armor? And if there is, what is it?
Well, you know, the fact that they don't really blow people out too much to me. I mean, they're in a lot of close games, and in Omaha, close games can go either way. I mean, it helps to have a great bullpen and a great defense and athletes all over the place. I think that gives you an advantage in pretty much every close game.
Right.
But you never know. I mean, you just never know what can happen. I think the fact that they don't have the kind of offense that's going to really create a lot of distance between themselves and opponents most of the time, I think maybe that's the weakness. But, I mean, as far as they play great defense. You know, they've got tons of depth.
They've got athletes.
They've got the best bullpen here, and I love Florida's bullpen, and I love UCLA's bullpen, and I like TCU's bullpen, and I really like South Carolina's bullpen. There's some great bullpens.
Yeah, there are.
Oklahoma's got a great bullpen.
Yeah, Oklahoma. They didn't even need it.
Basically, everybody except Clemson, and, you know, Florida State has a great closer, but not much else. There's a lot of good bullpens here. Arizona State's got the best one.
I think Clemson, to me, they're the two seed. They're the only two seed here, and I would say that out of these eight clubs, they're the eighth place club. But I do think it's funny they do have enough offense. I think they're not going to go gentle. I don't think they're going to beat Arizona State in that first game. But I think Clemson's going to be a factor out there because of their power. I think a lot of it depends on how the ballpark and how Rosenblatt's playing
this
year.
Right.
If the wind's blowing out, that kind of thing, you don't want to get into a – Clemson, this year's team could be like one of those Tennessee teams in days of yore where they played some of those ugly 1911 games and that kind of stuff. That could be Clemson this year. And the common theme, of course, there is orange.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, meanwhile, Aaron, we have to address this. We're being addressed on the blog. Oklahoma goes to Charlottesville and beats Virginia. Texas is our preseason number one. Virginia was our preseason number two. Those two teams were really 1, 2, or 3 all year, I think. It was just amazing consistency by both those clubs. But Texas, I think we've already explained, Texas just ran into a really good a TCU team and just couldn't hit enough against Matt Perk and Kyle Winkler and Lockwood. What happened to Virginia against Oklahoma? Was it the matchup and the fact that Oklahoma had a lot of good left-handed bats and Virginia did not have enough left-handed pitchers to counter that? Or do we just really – is Oklahoma just better than Virginia?
Oklahoma's not better than Virginia. They had a better weekend than Virginia. I mean,
agree with that.
You know, if you want to argue with us, if you want to say we're just, you know, pumping up the wrong teams all year long, Virginia stinks because they fell one win short of Omaha, you can disagree. But they won 50 games.
Podcast at baseballamerica.com. Send them
They won 50 games. I mean, they had one bad weekend all year against NC State, and then they fell one win short of the College World Series. This is a team filled with Omaha veterans, incredibly talented. You ask any coach in the ACC, I mean, read our Super Regional scouting reports. None of those other teams in Super Regionals came close to Virginia when it came to balance. I mean, Virginia is awesome.
Virginia is awesome. They were a great team. They were a very, very good team. I would say to earn great team, you got to get to Omaha.
Yeah.
Can't call them a great team. They didn't get to Omaha this year. Last year's team obviously did, but this year was not last year.
But so what I'm trying to say is give Oklahoma credit. They beat a great team on the road. I mean, they showed up there. They were the hotter team. It mattered.
I think that's the way to say it. I also think that Oklahoma's bullpen was better than Virginia's. I think that when it came down to it, I think Virginia did not hit. I don't know if you could say because they were tight or what, but they expanded the zone against Bobby Shore. They hit some Adam balls. They got no breaks in the last game of that offensively, and then they really just didn't pitch well. Brandon Klein did not pitch well. Tyler Wilson didn't pitch too great. Their defense wasn't good enough. Nothing went right for them in that final game. Obviously, that's how you lose 11-0. But
The bottom line to me is if Robert Morey pitches well,
yeah,
then it's a different. I mean that. I mean I hate to put it on one guy, but Robert Morey needed to pitch better than they did in game two.
Yeah, Oklahoma got to Bulla Bob, and Virginia. You know, when Virginia scores 7 runs in Davenport Field, it usually wins. I wonder what their record is in games where they score 7 points in that ballpark. But I think all the credit has to get to Oklahoma. And both of us talked about this, Aaron. When we read that Super Regional scouting report that you got on Oklahoma, we were both like, you know, they sound better than I thought they were. And I think we were both lulled a little bit to sleep by the fact that their conference was weak. They were 12-10 in their conference at one point, and their non-conference schedule wasn't great. But this team got rolling, and obviously their power was really evident. That's not a home run ballpark over UVA,
right.
But that didn't bother Cody Ryan. That didn't bother the rest of Oklahoma's bats.
Yeah, and you know they can score runs a ton of different ways. I mean, they're in that respect. I mean, I think that they're almost more. They can almost beat you more ways offensively than Arizona State can because they do have the more of a power dimension, and they'll pull out all the stops offensively. I mean, they'll run like crazy. They'll hit and run. They'll bunt. They'll do all kinds of things multiple times in a row. They'll just throw you off.
And yet they can also beat you with power. And they did it this weekend without Garrett Bouchel having a big weekend.
Yeah,
which
he was 0-9 going into that last game until he finally had a 2-run single or something or a double. But and he's their best player certainly. So I mean, I think it's a really good team and it's red hot right now. And I love the way they're pitching as well. I mean, Bobby Shorter of course has been clutch, but. You know, Michael Roach has pitched very well.
And they've got a nice bullpen, a deep bullpen with a stud closer, exactly.
They're so dangerous, and I actually like their chances to win that first game against South Carolina. You know, partly because South Carolina doesn't have a lot of lefties. I mean, we saw how effective lefties could be against Oklahoma. And I don't
not
think
any lefty, obviously.
Yeah,
Danny
you have to have a good
lefty.
Firm special lefty. And it's not like this Oklahoma team is loaded with lefties. It's still pretty balanced. I mean, I think it's actually 5 righties, 4 lefties in their usual starting lineup. So,
okay.
And Bouchel's right-handed, Max White's right-handed, and Chris Ellison. I mean, you know.
Yeah, Ryan and Seitzer seem like they're the top left-handed bats.
Yeah.
And Bushyhead.
I mean, you know, those and Danny Black's a good player. So, I mean, like, they've got 4 lefties, 5 righties. It's a pretty good balance team.
Yep.
But that said, I think Michael Roth and Tyler Webb, you know, Stephen Neff, those South Carolina lefties in the bullpen, I think they're going to have to play a key role here if South Carolina's going to win this thing. I mean, unless Blake Cooper just pitches a heck of a game in that opener, which he could.
Blake Cooper or Sam Dyson, whatever right-hander South Carolina's going to throw at these guys at Oklahoma, it's going to have to do better than Robert Morey, bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, I think we know that Oklahoma can hit sliders from right-handed pitchers because that's what you see from Virginia. You see a boatload of slide pieces.
And South Carolina's very similar. I mean, you know, Blake Cooper pitches off his off-speed stuff a lot, and he's, I think, kind of similar to Morey. Maybe a better change, but better third pitch, better changeup.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, very useful.
A little more pitchability. A little less velocity, a little more pitchability.
Yeah. I think South Carolina, honestly, I think Dyson would be a better matchup against Oklahoma because velocity gives Oklahoma more trouble.
And he's got that power. When he's on, he's throwing both his curve and his slider, but he has a curveball. It could be a power curveball. He's at his best when his curveball is good. So, I was about to say the same thing. Kudos to South Carolina. Going on the road to beat, you know, like, you know, you want to talk about upsets. It's not talked about as much because they went into Coastal Carolina and beat the number 4 national seed. Virginia was the number 5 national seed. So you have 3 of your top 5 national seeds go down and go down hard. So only 3 national seeds, Arizona State, you're 1, Florida, you're 3, UCLA, you're 6, get to Omaha. And yet I really think that, you know, the rest of these teams, the teams that didn't get to Omaha, those top 6, I think, were pretty legit, and 3 of them didn't get here.
There's no question.
And I'm not saying that Louisville and Georgia Tech weren't legit, but they were at a different level than the top 6 in my mind. We talked all year about there being like a separation of these top 4 or 5 teams. Coastal Carolina kind of came in there. UCLA, we had dropped out of that elite mix. And then a couple of those quote-unquote elite teams, Texas and Virginia, not getting to Omaha. I mean, that's a big surprise. I think you have to really give credit to Oklahoma and TCU for getting the job done on the road. But I think South Carolina deserves a little credit for it wasn't nearly as difficult going on the road. They're in the same state. You know, Coastal Carolina, for the most part, Aaron, South Carolina and Coastal Carolina are recruiting the same player. South Carolina gets it.
Yeah.
You know, they're South Carolina. And I thought Gary Gilmore's quotes, the coach of Coastal Carolina, were painful to read, but probably true. Omaha has never felt further away. You're the home team in a super regional, and you lose with that team. I think I understand why Gary Gilmore said that, and that just tells you what kind of competitor that guy is.
Yeah.
But also tells you a little bit about his perspective. He's right.
This was the best team Coastal's ever had, and I mean, I really thought all year long, I kept saying it, I thought they were an Omaha team, and I thought they were going to win that Super Regional. I thought they were going to find a way, even though South Carolina was more rested on the mound, had the advantages in that department.
South Carolina's bullpen has been great all year and really got the job done in this Super Regional. I think Mark Calvi, their pitching coach, deserves some credit for
he does a good job
managing that bullpen all year and getting them to Omaha. And,
Sam Dyson got jumped in that second game.
Absolutely.
He gave up four runs, was chased in the second inning. And, of course, they just turn over to the bullpen. It's Mata, it's Neff, it's Taylor, it's Roth, it's Carter, it's Price. Here we go.
And Price on back-to-back games
was
awesome.
He's outstanding.
He really is. He was spectacular. I mean, that 4-3 game, he comes in the eighth inning on the first game and strikeout, pop-out to get out of that bases-loaded, no-outs jam.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it was tremendous.
Both those games were really tight, close.
They were
closely
great
contested.
Games.
Great games. I mean, South Carolina, again, like you said, I think it required a heroic effort from Matt Price, the bullpen, to win that first game. And then the second game, you had, it looked like Coastal was going to win that thing. I think they were up two runs, and then Christian Walker with a three-run Johnson. And
with a Chad Flack-like moment.
Bad flip.
Yeah, crushing a three-run home run to reverse a lead and turn into a – take a deficit and turn into a lead.
Yeah.
Ranking these four teams, Aaron, is Arizona State the prohibitive favorite over here? Are they the strong favorite, slight favorite? They have to be the favorite.
They're the favorite for sure.
Yeah.
I think they're a pretty strong favorite.
I would use the word strong. I wouldn't use the word prohibitive, but I would use the word strong.
All these teams are playing pretty well right now. They're all pretty hot. Obviously, you're in Omaha. You're playing pretty well. Who knows what could happen, but I think I'm going to pick Arizona State on that side of the bracket. I just think that they're just so complete, and I think Oklahoma is the runner-up for me on that side of the bracket.
I agree that Arizona State is the strong favorite. I like South Carolina a little bit better than Oklahoma, but boy, I like Oklahoma. I was extremely impressed with Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma, as far as just like hot, out of all the teams in Omaha, which team is playing nearest its peak level?
Yeah.
I think it's them.
Yep.
I'm just going back to May 1st. May 1st, they lost the middle game of a series at home against Kansas State. They have lost five times since May 1st. They lost May 1st. They lost May 8th. They lost May 14th. They lost May 28th. They lost June 12th. That's it. For a solid month and a half, this team goes out on the field every time thinking they're going to win.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the hottest team in the country. They're the hottest team in Omaha. I think Oklahoma is super dangerous.
Would not
shock me if Oklahoma won the whole thing.
I agree with you.
But at the same time, I think South Carolina's bullpen depth, their balance, their defense. It seems like they're a little bit better defensively, maybe a little bit more athletic than Oklahoma. I like that South Carolina team. I've liked it all year. They're playing close to their peak level right now as well. But I think Arizona State is the strong favorites. I guess I didn't expect I was going to do this, but I'm picking an all-Pac-10 final, Arizona State and UCLA. And Aaron, I'm picking Arizona State to win the national championship. I know they're the number one national seed, but they've been the best team all year for a reason. I think it'd be an amazing story for Tim Esme to take over this program.
Yeah.
He was forced out prior to the 2009 season as assistant coach to come back and take over after Pat Murphy was let go, and to do this without Josh Spence and to win the national championship without roster would be an amazing story, and I think it's going to happen. I'm picking Arizona State.
It's a fine pick. It's a fine pick, and it's the logical pick, and they're the only team here, really, aside from Florida State, that has players on his roster with Omaha experience, and they've got a lot of guys with Omaha experience.
That's a factor for me as well.
I think that matters. When it comes down to it, if they're in a three-game series against TCU, which is what I am predicting, not with a lot of confidence, mind you, because I have really no idea what's going to happen this week.
Right.
I'm really excited about this field.
Absolutely. It's a great field. It's a really fun field.
Yeah, it's a fun field. And, I insisted all year long that Texas and Virginia were the two best teams in the country, and neither one's in Omaha. So you never know what's going to happen. If there's a three-game series between Arizona State and TCU, I think it would be very fascinating. I mean, I think TCU does have enough pitching to shut down that ASU offense. It's a very good ASU offense, but I don't think it's an elite ASU offense.
It's not elite. It's good, but by their own standards, it is certainly not elite.
And I think TCU is good enough offensively to scratch out some runs against the likes of Blair and Kelly and Jake Borup.
So for us, the college season started in Fort Worth, in Dallas-Fort Worth, at the ABCA convention, and we made a visit to Lupton Stadium, saw the campus, saw their indoor facility, toured around with Todd Whitting and Jim Schlossnagel. Saw Jim Schlossnagel's new house across the street from the ballpark, basically. Are you going to finish us where we started with TCU as your national champion?
I'm taking the Horned Frogs.
That is a bold pick. That's a bold, fresh piece of humanity, Aaron.
Got to pick something.
You got to pick something, and you're picking TCU. I'm picking Arizona State. I know I'm going chalk. But that is a bold pick. I love it. I love that you're going to paint it purple, as they say over in East Carolina. I don't know if they do that at TCU, but that would be, in a lot of ways, another great sign for college baseball, that when you look at the landscape of college sports, the way it's changing right now, the way it might change in the future, can we imagine talking about a college postseason if Texas and these Pac-10 teams were all in the same conference? How would you seed regionals and super regionals then? This whole system would not work if you had four 16-team super conferences like
you
might
be
headed for.
You're right.
There's no way it would work. You'd have to blow up the whole thing, which would be interesting. Maybe it should be blown up.
But now it looks like the Big 12 is saved, right?
What's left of it is a 10-team conference, and who knows what it'll be called. I don't know if they want to trade names with the Big 10.
Yeah.
They should, but it's kind of stupid. I say that we outlaw the name Big for every conference, but that's really neither here nor there. But the way that the college sports landscape is changing, the way that you must be in a BCS league for football, the way for basketball it's so dominated by the BCS leagues. In baseball, anything can happen. You could have a WAC team win the national championship like happened 2 years ago. You could have a Big South team hosting a super regional with a chance to go to Omaha. These are all power conference schools with the exception of TCU, but what if a Mountain West team wins the national championship in baseball? Second time in 3 years we have a non-traditional, non-BCS league win the baseball championship. Obviously, we had the SEC last year, but 2 years ago with the WAC, Fresno State, and here at TCU, if Aaron Fitt's prediction comes true. I think those would be neat things for college baseball. I think that just tells you that the playing field in college baseball is more wide open than it is for any other college sport. So I think it'd be great, a good sign for college baseball to send out to the nation. So there would be no better sign of parity if two times in 3 years you have Mountain West and WAC teams winning the national championship. Aaron, it's been a fun season. Obviously, we're both going to Omaha tomorrow. We will chat and cover the heck out of the College Series like we always do. Anything else you want to say about this field in Omaha?
Like I said before, I think it's a really compelling field. I love to see new blood in there. There's a lot of talent in this field, young talent especially. There's a lot of teams, UCLA, Florida, TCU.
A lot of teams that will be back here next year.
Yeah, high-profile underclassmen on those teams.
Those teams are going to be
Arizona State as well.
Those teams are going to be eight for Omaha teams at the end of this, sure.
I suspect so.
I agree. And we'll follow it all at the college blog and at baseballamerica.com. And we thank you so much for following us all year. Obviously, we'll also be tweeting during the game, so don't forget, you can follow Aaron at Aaron Fitt. My Twitter is at John Manuel BA. Follow us both at Baseball America on Twitter. And we'll be updating Facebook as well. And there are a million ways to follow Baseball America right now. The brand is over so many platforms, and one of them is the podcast, and we hope you enjoyed it all year. So for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. I want to thank our sponsors, MLB Network. We'll see you from Omaha on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.